You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM on your radio dial. If you're online, the address is kptz.org. You can listen to today's show online, live, and you can also sample some of our earlier shows. They're up as podcasts. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is available as podcasts. You know, double your listening pleasure. Hear today's show as well as some earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who are the people sitting at the picnic tables in front of Dogs Afoot? And who are the guys sifting through all the stuff at Waste Not, Want Not? And then there's the ladies who get together to knit and gossip. Who are they talking about? This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with people who make up the eclectic mix around here. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, lawyers and ladies who lunch, even bus drivers and teenage beauty queens. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, otters, and the soaring eagles. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people, your neighbors, your friends, and particularly the people you don't know yet, but you'd like to meet them. Today's guest is Daniel Knudsen, chef and pool shark, a man of many talents, who currently is a mainstay at Key City Foods. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Hello, how are you today?
Good.
Good.
This isn't the first time that you've been a guest on our show.
No,
however,
it isn't.
Some of our listeners maybe have never met you before. So let's start at the beginning. Were you born and raised in Port Townsend?
No, I was actually born in a barn in Millbury, Ohio, just south of Toledo, Ohio.
So born in a manger?
Not quite, but pretty close. It was remade into a home, but it looked like a barn. So I always use that so that I can leave doors open where'er I go and hope that somebody questions me about it.
So did you go to school in Ohio?
I did. I graduated high school in Findlay, Ohio, was married in my junior year and enlisted for the Vietnam War in 71.
Mm-hmm. And did you end up going to Vietnam?
Well, what I did was I went into microwave radar technology, which was just coming out then, and I graduated at the top level of this course that I was taking for the Q4 radar, which made me more important to stay home and work on the higher echelon radar than working out in the fields in Vietnam. So they kept the 30-level graduates at home to work on the radar, so I ended up in Monterey, California, at Fort Ord.
Well, I think that's a better place to spend the Vietnam War than Vietnam.
Yeah, that was kind of the plan.
Yes. Okay, so how long were you in the service?
4 years.
And then what?
And so at the end of my military career, we got to know some people that lived in Monterey, and a friend of mine, Stafford Decker, had purchased a home up here in Port Townsend for $50,000, a five-bedroom Victorian home, sight unseen. He hadn't even come up here.
Wow.
And he was a really good friend. Because of my farming career, I knew how to drive a semi, so I offered to drive semi for him and bring all his worldly possessions up here. I was fresh out of the military and looking for some place to live, and came to Port Townsend and stayed.
Well, and so you had never been here before.
No, never, huh?
Wow. And can you look back, and what were your first impressions of the town when you first saw it?
Well, when I first got here, it was pretty much all of Uptown was a ghost town. All the big Victorian beautiful homes were all plywooded up, and nobody lived up in the upper areas too much. Most of the community lived downtown on Water Street, which entailed the town tavern, which at the time was a commune, which supported its livelihood by having a bar and a soup kitchen.
Wow.
Pretty amazing.
Other people have mentioned the town tavern to me. How many people were there?
I'm going to have to say there were probably 30 individuals that communally worked there and lived there upstairs. It was quite an entourage of people.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful place.
So did you actually live there?
No, like I said, when I moved Stafford up here, I was able to have a room in his place, but I did inadvertently make my living in Port Townsend at that time, shooting pool at the town tavern with the, and at the time the ferry system came straight from Seattle to Port Townsend. It was a 2-hour trip on the ferry. So every 2 hour they would bring in a new batch of people in to shoot pool. So I just kind of hung out at the town tavern and shot pool for a living. It worked well.
It was fun. How long did that go on?
Oh, I would probably have to say 2 years, 3 years, you know.
You were a young guy shooting pool?
Yeah, just getting out of the military. Wasn't really looking to do anything work-wise.
Yeah.
But then I got interested. They were opening a restaurant on Water Street called the Judge's Chamber. So that was the first restaurant that I worked at here in Port Townsend, and it lasted for about 3 or 4 years. And then it turned into a restaurant called the Plumber's Landing, which... not plumber like fixing your pipes, but plumber was one of the tall boat captains of the old days, came in, so they used his name as the name for the restaurant, kind of a historic name.
Hmm. Okay.
And it lasted for another 5 years, I'd say.
And then what?
About that time, I met a couple, Gary and Sue Wall, who opened a Mexican restaurant called La Fonda, and I was the head chef at La Fonda for 10 years straight from 1980 to 1990.
Well, I have a question.
Yes.
Sitting here in front of me, you don't appear to be Mexican in origin. How did you learn to cook Mexican food?
Well, that's a really good question, because I've been a chef all my life, but... Gary and Sue were from Vail, Colorado. Gary was like the youngest police chief that had ever retired. So they actually came up with the idea. We enlisted a Mexican lady named Carmen from Brennan. And she came in and we set up the menu with her, trained. We made the whole menu so that you could either go vegetarian or all the meat. So it was set up vegetarian so that any type of person could eat there. And Carmen, I adopted her. She was my mom from that point on. So in that reference, I do have a Mexican mom. So
I see. So you did learn to cook.
Exactly.
Well, you know, I grew up in Southern California. And living in the Northwest, and in fact, living in the East, I haven't found many Mexican restaurants that are worth calling Mexican restaurants.
I totally understand that. Yeah. Oddly enough, it was the most successful restaurant I've ever worked at here in Port Townsend. Unfortunately, Gary and Sue decided that the weather didn't agree with him after he ran for city council and only lost by 3 votes.
Oh, dear.
And he's another Leo, so his vanity was a bit bruised, I believe. That's just coming from me, but that's how I saw it, you know. But I really care a lot for those guys. And it was a sad day when the restaurant disbanded, but...
Wow, and so then you were obviously looking for another opportunity at that point?
Yeah. Word gets around, obviously, in Port Townsend. So
right.
Ray and Gene Hansen were the original people that put up, like, $7 million and turned an old concrete structure out in Hadlock called the Alcohol Plant into a working, functioning restaurant, hotel... beautiful place. I mean, and they really went all out, and it was a very, very popular place. We would run prime rib on the weekends, and on Sundays we would do a full buffet breakfast, which people would just line up to go and see it. So, you know, that was probably one of my funnest places to cook, just for the ambiance of the place and the view from there. You could see Port Townsend off in the distance across the bay. And Ray and Gene were something else to work for as well.
Well, so what happened to that restaurant?
Ray and Gene were getting along in their years and stuff and couldn't handle it anymore, so they sold it to some people from, I believe it was the Burks from Hawaii. It just switched hands from that point on. I had changed employee with Craig and Debbie Erickson out at the original Oyster House, which was another beautiful place to work, you know, all these wonderful places to work, which used to be down in Discovery Bay, right on the water. And it was a destination to get there, but the quality of the food and everything kept us busy all the time. So it was a really nice restaurant right on the waterfront. Mm-hmm. I kind of miss that place too.
And in the sequence after the Oyster House, you went to?
I went and worked for Nancy at Nancy's place, which is a kind of a, it's a, where Fiesta Jalisco is right now.
Okay.
But Nancy and Mike McConaughey owned it for, I'm going to say 20 years, just off the top of my head. And it was a mom and pa dinner place, but I kind of got in there and switched it up and made a different nationality of food every day of the week. Just, if I don't have a bit of a challenge, I'm kind of wishing I had, so I kind of create my own challenges sometimes.
Did each of these restaurants have sort of a signature dish that you would say, was it, you know, more broad spectrum?
It was, well, you know, Nancy's like was more chicken and dumplings, and as a chef, you know, we're talking hamburgers and chicken fried steak and things of that effect, which in their own right are fine, but it just didn't really stimulate me. But they were ready for a change, too. They'd been in the business for quite a while, so they were real happy to see somebody take the ball and run with it. Most of the times, like, seafood was the original Oyster House was seafood was the main fare, but we ran a lot of different steaks as well. Nice line of desserts. And the, again, the alcohol plant was upper end, leaning more towards the people that stayed there. So, you know, but again, a steakhouse, whatever you wanted, fresh salmon.
Didn't you also work for the Bayview at one point?
Well, Laura, my son married the owner's daughter, so it's in it was in the family, and she was needing some help. So I ran the Bayview for like 4 years and focused on bringing in, I had already been affiliated with the Key City Fish, so I knew John Paul Davies really well. And so I would took over the managing of the restaurant and also running the specials and going in and showing these chefs how to prepare the specials. And so my duties were seating people and make sure everybody's happy. And then I would go out to each table and tell them my list of fresh fish every day, which I think if you're going to have a seafood restaurant, it should be how it should be done is whatever the catch of the day is what you should offer. So it was a challenge for the cooks to keep up with me, let's put it that way, you know. But I had a good time, and so did they, I think, you know. Everybody, we all worked together really well.
Sounds like fun.
It was.
You now are at Key City Fish, which most of our listeners know is not just fish. Right. It's fish and meat. What was the transition there?
Well, I had worked up at, John Paul had a restaurant called the Castle Key up in the Manresa Castle. He had employed me as a chef up there. And then when the lease ran out on that, the people that owned the castle wanted to do their own restaurant in there. So I, of course, went with John Paul down to the Key City Fish and started managing the front end of Key City.
You know, those of us who are customers at Key City just see this small little shop, basically, and obviously there are big freezers out back. But give us an idea of the scope of the business. How many employees? How big is it?
The establishment itself is a wholesale seafood and meat, poultry, pork for restaurants. But John Paul got his start with Key City Fish in a small shop down by the waterfront, down where the ferry used to be. He's gone on to turn this into a full-scale wholesale to mostly restaurants with scope from all the way out to Claylock Lodge and a plethora of restaurants in Seattle as well, and then all towns in between. So we have four trucks that travel all over Washington every day, and we employ probably 25 to 30 people at the top, you know. So we have drivers, we have a night shift that fillet fish all night and package for restaurants. Then we have a taco stand in there now. And then we have my retail crew, which is about six people. So we stay pretty busy, but John Paul has made it an opportunity for local people to get the product that he brings in to distribute to all these other big restaurants. And he also has a membership, so you can get a 10% discount and everything you purchase if you have a yearly membership, which is really nice too, which is, you know, so it makes it easier to shop there.
You're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, as Marianne McNellis, host of Our Town. I'm talking with Daniel Knudsen, who is with Key City Fish. Now, Daniel, it's summertime. Let's talk a little bit about what your suggestions might be for a perfect summer party. Food-wise.
Yes, I'm totally acclimated to that. I've done a lot of catering for barbecues and things to that effect. And I really find it important when you're hosting a barbecue that you get your product and everything pre-made ahead of time for the barbecue so you can enjoy that barbecue time with all your guests, because it's kind of, it isn't as much fun if you're glued to that barbecue while everybody else is enjoying the festivities. So I always recommend pre-cooking your chicken. I boil my chicken, if I'm going to use chicken, ahead of the game and chill it in the refrigerator. You can also bake it as well, and you can use your seasoning on that either way. The reason I boil it and then put it on a flat sheet and put it in the cooler is so that when you go to put it on the barbecue, all you have to do then is add the sauce and leave your heat down low so that you're not burning it and you're not trying to get that chicken in the core by the bone all the way done. It's ready to eat when you put it on the barbecue. So that makes it a lot easier. If you're doing like pork ribs, I like to put them on a flat sheet and bake them off the day before with liquid smoke, or your favorite dry rub is always good, you know. And then you cook them off at like 350 for about an hour so that they're nice and done. And then again, all you do is apply them to the barbecue, put your favorite sauce on them, and they're ready to go, and you're right there with it.
You know, you told me something the other day about the stock.
Yes.
Tell us the secret you have for the stock.
Okay, well, when I'm doing, like, for instance, beef ribs, or with the chicken, when I boil the chicken off, or when I'm doing beef ribs, how I prepare beef ribs is I season them, and I put them in a red wine and a demi-glace or a beef stock to roast them off until they're perfectly done. So beef ribs have a tallow and a fat content to them that you kind of want to reduce that away from the meat itself. So you want to get your ribs all the way done. And I often will do it very similar to doing a pot roast. So I put my mirepoix, which is like celery, carrots, onions, and whatever herbs that you might have, and some garlic, and put an aluminum top on it and let that cook and do your ribs just like you do a pot roast, so that the bones literally ready to almost fall out of it. Once you get that done, again, you can either have them in the oven or you can transfer them to cooler and have them the next day.
Okay, but what about the ice cubes?
Exactly. When I get done with doing my stocks, so I do them again like a pot roast, or I do the boil the chicken in a stock, I will take the chicken out, I'll put it the stock in the cooler and let the fat rise, take the fat off, and then I put it in little ice cube trays and freeze the ice cubes into stock cubes, and then I put them in Ziploc bags, and that way later on when you're making a soup or a stock or a beef demi-glace or something to that effect, you're not throwing the juice that you've taken off those chicken away. You're actually saving all that stock to use at a later date, which is really what cooking's all about. Yeah. Is using all of the product.
That's really pretty amazing. I never would have thought of doing that. You know, ice cubes that are really stock that you can use. That's a wonderful idea. Now, having been in Key City a number of times, I've noticed that in addition to your normal, you know, beef, chicken, or salmon, halibut, whatever, mm-hmm. you have some pretty exotic stuff, like elk and buffalo and things like that. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, that again goes under the heading for me of I like to do a little bit more than just what the regular call of duty is on that day. So I always offer my members, as it were, the opportunity to indulge in different types of meat. And I have a farm down in Oregon called Nikki Farms, and they are purveyors of venison, buffalo, elk, water buffalo, emu, ostrich, quail, duck, geese, just anything that is not common, because to me that's what fun there is in cooking, is to be able to explore with other things, like who has quail for dinner, you know. It's like, and it's so delicate and light, and the beauty of higher proteins like that is it takes less of it to please your palate and your stomach, because you're experiencing not just the cooking of it but the different flavors of it, you know.
Wow. Is it very different to cook something like venison than beef, are there very different techniques?
It depends again on the cut of the, you know, like the venison or the elk. I offer some elk rack down there that you do it a lot like you're doing a rack of lamb, mm-hmm. where you sear it. What the recipe I have for it is I take and clean the rack, and I totally soak it in a Dijon mustard base, and then I press it into 50% coffee grind, the espresso grind, and 50% sugar. And you coat the whole rack with that,
wow.
And then you sear it in hot oil on both sides so that it caramelizes that coffee and sugar together. So you've got an espresso, basically an espresso rack, and then you, after you sear that on both sides, you stick it in the oven. And I usually hit my rack at like perfect 120, which is a perfect medium rare. So there are parts of the elk and venison that you can eat rare or medium rare, but usually with venison, you know, it's usually better to, you know, cook it all the way, like sirloins or shoulder roast or something like that.
Well, okay, this coating of coffee grinds.
It's espresso ground, so really fine ground coffee.
With brown sugar.
And then no regular sugar.
Regular sugar.
Yeah, and then you do Dijon mustard on the rack, and then you press the whole thing into this.
That sounds really yummy.
It's amazing. I mean, once you've had it, you're going like, how come I didn't think of that?
Yeah, but, well, you could use that on other things than venison.
Oh, yeah. You could do it on you could use a rack of lamb as well.
I may have to try that.
Yes, it's fun.
It's pretty amazing.
And pork. You can do pork that way as well.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here.
Please.
It is called Key City Fish. Do you have a favorite fish yourself? I mean, what would you say?
Well, yes.
Okay.
I'm going to have to say that my favorite fish would be ahi tuna.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because you can go sashimi with it. You can sear it. They were doing a really nice lavender black pepper crust on it at the Silver Water.
That sounds good.
Which is really good. And, you know, so I like that. I like the flavor of the ahi the most. You know, of course, halibut. I've done a lot of halibut. I like rockfish because I can blacken it.
You know, I'm not an expert chef or anything, but I've really had trouble with fish, like particularly something like swordfish. I cook it and it tastes like shoe leather. What am I doing wrong?
Well, when you're dealing with tombos like an albacore or an ono, which is another exotic fish, your swordfish or your blue marlin, what you really want to do is you want to do a hot heat, salt and pepper only. And you, if you're not used to cooking it, then I always recommend to have a meat thermometer at hand. You sear it on one side, you turn it over, and you hit it at a perfect 130 in the core of whatever you're cooking, and that will leave it medium rare, and you will never have this tough fish again.
Okay.
So it's a searing, a quick sear thing. And you know, if you want to finish it off so that it's even more done, what you do is after you sear both sides, you have a shot, you know, 2 ounces of wine, and you throw that in the oil and put a lid on it, and that steams it off the rest of the way and finishes it off.
That's a good tip. Okay, now, as a man who's very experienced in food and restaurants, if you go into a restaurant that you've never experienced before, what do you look for? What's your game plan?
Well, personally, if I go to a place that says it's a seafood restaurant and I don't see at least 3 or 4 people waiting to get in, right away the red lights go off for me, because I want to know that not only are they doing seafood, but I want to know that they're doing seafood well enough that there is people wanting to get into the place, which tells me 2 things. It tells me that they're doing the seafood right, and it also tells me that there is a good turnover because there's people waiting to get in there to have it. That is usually what I look for first, and then I want, you know, how I experience the wait person, if they're excited about the specials. But usually I go for the odd thing on the menu. I'm always looking for something that's a little bit that doesn't seem like that goes with the rest of the menu. And usually that's the ethnicity or the cook is adding something in there that tells you that that's them.
Okay, give me an example.
My wife and I ate at a Mexican restaurant in Seattle called The Cactus, which is a really upper-end Mexican restaurant. Very nice place. So I went in and we looked over the whole menu, and it was, you know, very, very Mexican. And then at the bottom of the list, it was a chicken fried chicken. And I'm going like, that is like more Southern than anything to me. But I went ahead and I ordered a side order of it, and they really did it right. They had taken a chicken breast and they had flattened it out and pan fried it just like you do a chicken fried steak.
Yeah.
Like they do down south.
Yeah.
And then they used a chorizo gravy for a cream gravy over the top. And it was spectacular, but that's the kind of stuff I look for is stuff that really, you know, isn't on a regular menu. So, but that's because I'm a chef. I'm always looking to see what the guy's doing in the kitchen.
Do you pick up ideas when you go out?
All the time. I pick up ideas for cooking everywhere I go. It's like in town here, people come in and they want to make cioppino. I said, here's what you're going to do. And I sell them the fish. And I said, do you use any fennel in your cioppino? And they're going, no, I'm not aware of fennel. I said, well, if you go downtown in Port Townsend, if you go by like where the liquor store used to be in that field, is huge fields of fennel for free. And you just take and tap, pull one up. They're real easily to pull up. And you just take and clean the root off. And that root is the best to saute in with your celery, carrots, and onions. It's amazing.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. But everywhere I go, I come up with new ideas about cooking. So I kind of, cooking is inbred in my life.
Well, you know, believe it or not, we're almost out of time here. So I suppose as a more or less final question, do you play favorites in Port Townsend? Are there any restaurants that you think are the best, or is it too tough to call?
I like them all. I love Dan down at the Alchemy. I love what he does. I love Doc's because they offer, I'm always dieting even though I'm always cooking, so it's kind of a give and take for me. But I like a place where you can go and have your main entree and a salad, like a Caesar salad with it. Really blends in well with my diet, you know. So Silver Water always has a nice thing. I know in the wintertime Silver Water does these all-you-can-eat dishes like pot roast or spaghetti, which they do it delicately so it's not this bulk of all you can eat. It's delicately done so that you just get pleasantly full.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it's really good. And then Lanza's. Lanza's makes a puttanooska that just is pulls at my heartstrings, because that to me is like, that is like the ultimate dessert and dinner at the same time.
Quickly explain to the listener what it is.
Puttanooska is a pasta dish with sardines and capers and olives, Kalamata olives in it. And, it's just, if you have, once you have it, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
But you got to like sardines.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm more into tiramisu.
Anchovies is more what I'm, Well, I like tiramisu too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much
for being a guest on the show.
You've been listening to Our Town, a show that features some of the fascinating people who make up our community here on the Olympic Peninsula. I'm your host, Mary Ann McNellis. My guest today has been Daniel Knudsen of Key City Fish. Thank you for listening. Keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Mary Ann McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.